Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the 20th Annual Iowa Organic Conference is coming up on November 23rd. If you've ever wanted to attend but haven't been able to travel this year, you can attend from your home or office because, of course, the conference is virtual. And that also makes this a perfect time to focus on organic gardening. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett is here today. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, Charity. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure this is not how you thought your 20th annual organic conference was going to be. I'm sorry that it needs to be virtual, but that seems like a good decision. What's the focus of the conference this year?
Well, the focus is on diversity in organic. We're promoting that with three keynote speakers that'll have a different view coming from a grain perspective, a soils perspective, and a vegetable fruit and crops perspective. And I'm really glad that the University of Iowa had the rules that they, from the beginning of the semester, didn't allow gatherings of more than 50 people. So we knew with our typical registration, 200 to 300 people, we were going to have to go virtual. And yeah, it's a shame it's the 20th, but hopefully we'll celebrate big time next year.
Absolutely. And so that's going to be on Monday, the 23rd. It's a little shorter this year as well, from 9 to 1, right?
Correct. Yeah, we figured people didn't want to sit in front of the computer all day. So we have stretch breaks built in, and we're ending with a cooking demonstration by the University of Iowa chefs, Barry Greenberg and Ann Watson.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we know about how farmers have been dealing with the pandemic. I mean, farmers in Iowa have had some extra challenges, both with the pandemic and, of course, with a drought this summer. A lot of organic farmers sell their produce directly to the public or through farmers markets. That makes things extra challenging in this time of COVID. What do we know?
Right. And that's why we're having one of our speakers, it's actually a husband and wife team, Jordan and Whitney Clausen of Grade A Gardens in Johnston. They're going to share how they survived, I think, very well, the pandemic. They held what I call a COVID-safe farmer's market in Des Moines. It was a very small farmer's market, six vendors only. Everybody wore masks. Everybody socially distanced. And they used a lot of other precautions. And it seemed to go very well. So definitely want to talk about that, because that may need to continue to next year. And also just to talk a little bit about some strategies for surviving the drought using extra mulching, for example. I know a lot of gardeners did that this year. That really helped. And some have even resorted to putting in irrigation in their gardens.
Mm. Yeah, it was a rough year all around for that. It was interesting because leading up to 2020, it looked like we were seeing some CSAs, community supported agriculture groups, closing their doors. And then suddenly when the pandemic struck, the wait lists got very long for the CSAs that were still remaining. And I know, of course, a lot of CSAs are organic in Iowa. Do you have an idea on how things went and are going?
Right. I forgot to mention that Jordan and Whitney also have a CSA that was very successful. And I agree with you. The first speaker, Tom Harding, he's an international organic trade expert. He's going to talk about how organic jumped like 20% during the pandemic because a lot of people were looking for organic at this time. I don't know if you've noticed, but here in Ames, the commercials on TV, it seems like every one of them is advertising organic food. So I think, it's crazy to say, but I think the pandemic did give a boost to organic. I don't have a pulse on how all the CSAs did. I mean, just hearing from through the grapevine that they're all surviving. I haven't heard any that shut down. So I think they did very well.
Interesting. Well, it'll be very interesting to see how things develop over time. Let's talk about some hands-on advice, because Kathleen, in recent weeks, we've had a number of callers calling in to ask how they can implement cover crops in their own gardens. Of course, we are seeing the use of cover crops grow among farmers around the state of Iowa. more and more people are seeing it, hearing about it, and wanting to do it at home. Do you think cover crops are a good idea for the home garden?
Yeah, cover crops are a great idea everywhere. We have, at least according to the web, about 880,000 acres of cover crops in Iowa now. Of course, they're surveying farmers, and there's been a lot of government support for cover crops. So if farmers are listening, you can get $25 an acre if you apply through your local conservation district. And also there's federal support through the NRCS for cover crop planting. So I think that's really propelled the planting of cover crops throughout the state. But yeah, anybody can gain soil quality benefits by planting cover crops. They'll definitely improve your carbon sequestration and add more to your nitrogen pool and help increase your microbial populations in the soil. We have research showing that. So unfortunately, I'm doing the show a little late because the ideal time to plant is late September, early October. But with one good thing about global climate change, here we are, what is today, November 6th, and it's 70 degrees out, so it's a perfect time to plant cover crops.
Well, but, yeah, so I mean, obviously we may be doing some planning ahead for next year if it is too late for you to get this done this year. But for a smaller plot, for a home garden, what kinds of cover crops do you think are the best idea?
Mm-hmm. So the most basic one, and this is for farmers too, is just to plant a cover crop of rye. It's easy to pick up at your local farm and garden. Of course, you can also order it through more commercial seed houses like Albert Lee Seed House in Albert Lee, Minnesota, has a wonderful selection of cover crops. And they custom blend them too, so if you have some ideas that you want to mix, because ideally, I mean, rye is great. It's going to add a lot of biomass and carbon, improve your soil quality. But if you want to add something that's going to add nitrogen to your soil, you're going to need a legume of some sort. So our go-to cover crop mixture is hairy vetch and rye. So the hairy vetch will add nitrogen, and then the rye will add the biomass and also provides a place for the vetch to twine to grow on in the spring. So if you plant it now, you probably won't, unless we get more of this warm weather, but I don't think it's predicted much longer, unfortunately. You might not get much growth right now, with this actually winter. And then it'll start growing in the spring. And we usually let our cover crop, I have other mixes I can talk about too, but our traditional one, hairy veg rye, we let it grow till about May. And then we do different things to it. Most gardeners or farmers plow it under to get the benefits, the carbon and the nitrogen. You will get the most release of nitrogen when you plow it under. But the other thing we're experimenting with is called organic no-till, where you use this roller crimper. And there's smaller versions for backyards, too. I actually just took a piece of plywood and stepped on the rye and crushed it down, like a manual roller crimper, to crush the rye down, and that will actually kill it if you break the stems. And then it'll form this mat, ideally a thick mat, that you can transplant your vegetables into.
So it's farmers. And then it operates as a mulch.
Exactly.
All right. And does that keep other weeds down?
when all things, when all the stars align, yes. So you need to have, first of all, adequate biomass. So you need to plant it heavy, like 2 to 3 bushels an acre. Sorry, I'm giving acreage, but that's what I work with.
Right. You're anticipating my next question, which is, if you have a small garden plot, how do you get just enough seeds and not way too many?
Right. Maybe you can share with your gardener friends, too, because I think most farm gardens will sell it by the bushel, so you're going to end up with a bushel bag of rye. It does keep. I've had rye in my basement for 3 years now, and it germinated this year. So you can store it if you don't need all of it. But they may be breaking it down into smaller packets now. I haven't checked with my favorite garden stores to see if they would do that. But you know, a lot of times they'll do what you ask them to do if there's a market for it. The other thing Albert Lee has that I really love is these mixes that they've made up. And the mixes have things like oats and peas and radish. turnips, even kale. Now, these are really good for grazing cattle. So, you know, I'm sure most gardeners don't have that, but it's also fun to watch them grow, too, to think that you can have these things sprout this time of year. I think the turnip and kale will definitely sprout now. Hmm. And the peas will probably wait till spring.
Let's look again to next fall. If we're thinking, okay, maybe it's too late for me to do this year. But as you get to the end of your garden's growing season, what do you have to do to make that shift and to plant the cover crop?
So, yeah, most gardeners, well, you can probably do one of three things. Just leave your garden as is. You can, what we did a couple of weeks ago when the temperature dropped so much, was put a heavy layer of mulch on, particularly the strawberries, but anything else in the garden will appreciate a mulch layer too. So, you know, we did 6 to 8 inches of mulch on it. And we just got hay from the farm and garden, local farm and garden, and use that for mulch. But if you're planting cover crops, you want a clean surface. You want to, if you have a really weedy area, you'll want to till it lightly first before you plant your cover crop seed. If it's not, you know, you just have a weed here and there, you can directly, well, most people don't have drills. Farmers will drill right into existing fields if they're not weedy, their cover crop. But in the backyard, if you're broadcasting it, then you want to take your rake and rake it in because you want to have good seed to soil contact. That's what's needed to sprout those seeds as quickly as possible. And they're amazing how they'll just sit there either as small plants. We planted ours October 10th, and the rye is actually about 6 inches already. So you know you'll get a lot more growth if you plant it earlier in the season. But right now, they might sprout just like an inch or two, and then they'll just sit there over the winter and start regrowing in March and April.
All right, and you'll get some early green in your landscape from that.
Exactly.
As well. That's really nice. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about cover crops and organic gardening. The 20th Annual Iowa Organic Conference is coming up on November 23rd, and this year it's virtual, so you can attend from anywhere. You can find out more information about that online. With me, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here in a moment. Give us a call with your questions, 866-780-9100.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Debbie. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Particularly if you are an organic gardener, today is your day. Kathleen Dellett is here, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist. And Aaron Stile is on the line from Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Are you enjoying this little extra bit of summer that we're being treated to right now?
Yeah, it gives me an opportunity to maybe get a few things done outside I didn't think I was going to be able to get.
Well, and as Kathleen was saying, we're not going to have 70s through the next week, but we're having highs in the 50s all next week. So there is plenty of opportunity to spend some time outside, and things will look pretty green for a while. All right. If you have questions, give us a call, 866-780-9100. We're going to start with an email question. This is from Diana in Iowa City. I need lots of color in our front yard. What would you suggest for bushes? Is there a red bush that would stay that color all year long, or at least in the warm weather? What others would you suggest?
Take it away, Aaron.
There are, if you go shopping, what you'll find in terms of red in particular is barberry. And barberry is not necessarily a great landscape shrub anymore. It's a very tough shrub. It tolerates a lot of conditions. But what we're finding is that it's very weedy and can cause some real problems, especially in native woodlands. I would lean, if you're looking for something red, there are a couple of varieties of spirea that are really tough and tolerant that have colorful foliage all this throughout the season. There's also a couple of varieties of weigela, which is a shrub that blooms kind of late spring time frame with little trumpet-shaped flowers. And there are, like I said, a couple of cultivars that have purple or reddish foliage all season. So that would be an option.
Of course, right now we see so much burning bush in beautiful color all over the place. And that is not recommended anymore.
For the same reason barberry is not recommended. It's been found to be quite wee, especially in our woodlands.
All right. And that's one of the reasons that we see it everywhere this time of year. Mm-hmm. And it is beautiful, but it is invasive. So it's it would be nice if those bright colors would last and come in things that would stay put in their place. But that's just not always the case. All right. Next question. This one's from Peggy in Des Moines. She says, in April or May, a friend stopped by with her two kids to have lunch, opening the doors of the van so our kids could talk but stay distant. In a dramatic scene, her kids tossed their apple seeds onto our driveway so my kids could pick them up and plant them. Sure, I thought. Fast forward, apple sprouts. The kids are so stinking excited. They care for that seed all summer and it just keeps growing. It's now 20 inches tall. What do I need to do, if anything, for the winter? Aaron?
I would definitely give it a little rabbit protection over the winter. A tree that small will be very easily damaged by rabbit or deer. A simple cage made out of like chicken wire or hardware cloth, if it's small enough, it sounds like it might be small enough, you can put a top on it that would keep the deer out of it too. And that should be all you need to do through the winter. Apples are perfect winter hardy, and protecting it that way, removing that protection sometime in late winter, early spring, once everything starts greening up again, and should be good to go.
All right. So that can be a great project for the kids this weekend, to get the hardware cloth and build a cage. Do they need to, she said it's 20 inches tall, do they need to build that cage so there's some headroom?
A little bit of room so that they can't reach through it and nibble anything, but 24 inches of hardware cloth should work well. It's not going to be doing any growing until next spring at this point, so you're good there.
You need to warn the kids. They're not going to be eating apples off of it anytime soon.
That's true.
That is true. Although she said, she added at the end that my kids will be crushed if I mess this up. So maybe they just need the living tree to get them through, and then 10 years from now, they can pick some apples off it. All right.
get them going on a grafted one from a local nursery.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That'll give you fruit in 3 years.
Who knows? Maybe this has sparked a lifelong interest. Here's a question from Sarah in Bettendorf. I had a tomatillo plant that had a huge number of blossoms and husks, but when I went to pick them, most of the fruits were smaller than a quarter. I cut a few open and almost all of them had a hollow with a tiny white worm, a dark chrysalis wrapped in silk, or a quarter inch long dark fly. What do you think that is? And is there any way I can protect my plants next year? I've looked online and I'm not having any luck identifying the bug. Kathleen, is this one that sounds familiar to you?
I don't know specifically of any. I'm going to Google as we're talking. Fruit worm will get in tomato plants, which are related to tomatillos. So I suspect that's what it is. And for those, you can do several things. You can put a shade cloth over your plant to keep any flying insects from coming in, because it would be a moth that would come in and lay an egg on the plant. You can also spray a non-toxic, it's called Dipel, or Bacillus thuringiensis is the official name of it, a bacteria that only would hurt the worm. That's what I'm guessing. Aaron, you got any ideas on worms and tomatillo?
Yeah. I think if you can rotate, that might help some. Although, you know, these insects are mobile, of course. But if that's possible, that might also help for future crops.
All right. That sounds like a frustrating problem. you work a long time and then and then things don't look so good right there at the end. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. We have a couple of lines open for you, so it's a good time to get through. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Aaron, with this unusual weather, we talked earlier about the fact that we were seeing lilacs in bloom in various parts of Iowa because we had unusually cold weather followed by some warm weather. Then we had unusually cold weather again, and now we're having another warm spell. What do you think will come out of this?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I think the big thing to keep in mind, though, is that, you know, things like lilac blooming in the fall, there's not much you can do about it. And the good news is it's not a long-term detrimental thing to the plant. So, you know, you might as well just enjoy what you can. Unfortunately, it usually means that the flower display will be a little smaller the following spring because these plants set these flower buds in the fall. They overwinter and bloom first thing in the spring. And if some of those blooms, some of those buds open in the fall instead of overwintering and opening in the spring, then there's obviously fewer. But there's nothing you can do apart from, you know, changing the weather, which of course is impossible. So you just kind of enjoy it when you can and know that it's not a long-term detrimental thing to plant. It's an anomaly. It's a little stressful on the plant, but overall, they pull through and are just fine.
Well, and right now, of course, we're getting a little bit of a perfect weather for planting those fall or the spring blooming bulbs that maybe you haven't gotten in the ground yet. And we have this question from Lynn in Iowa City. It's a good one. What can I do to deter squirrels from digging up my newly planted bulbs? Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, that is very frustrating. Typically, for any of the little mammals that are running around, exclusion is the best control. And so exclusion in this situation would look like a hardware cloth or chicken wire or something like that, but simply rolled along the ground and pinned down with landscape staples or pins. If you have a rusty piece or if you have a plastic coated piece, it blends in, you don't even notice it. So it's not as unattractive, but rolling that over the top of the bed can go a long way to keeping anything from digging chipmunks and squirrels and all of those things from digging. And then you'll want to plan to remove that just as the foliage is emerging so that it doesn't get in the way of that of those leaves coming up on the ground. And then you could probably repurpose it as a fence, keep the bunnies off the leaves until they bloom.
All right. Good plan. And that seems to be a terrible problem for some people and not so bad for others. It just depends on how many squirrels and how determined they are in your neighborhood. We're going to go to the phones now. 866-780-9100. Mike is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you, Terry?
Good. What's your question?
I have a white ash tree that shades the deck for me. And ever since EAB came to Iowa, I've been having it treated. But nature has planted an autumn blaze maple about 20 feet southwest of that. And I thought, well, if something takes the ash tree, at least I'd have a start on another shade tree for the deck. When I had the ash tree treated this spring, my arborist told me it's the healthiest ash tree he's seen in quite a while. Nice crown to it. My question is, should I keep the maple? Is it too close to the ash? How should I proceed?
If you have plans of treating the ash for some time to come, it will stay healthy. I mean, the treatments that are provided by arborists and especially if you're diligent about doing it on a recommended schedule, work. So if that's the case, then you may want to plan to move this tree. 20 feet is probably a little closer than I would want it to be. It's a perfect spot if you knew that tree was leaving in a couple of years, maybe even as long as 5 or more years. But if this tree looks like it's still going to be around for a while, you plan on treating it, this ash tree, for a while, then that maple is a little closer than I would want it to be. It's no problem for plants to touch. So the maple tree will probably grow and the cone will be a little different shaped because it will be interfering with the ash. But it could stay there. It wouldn't be the end of the world. We have whole woodlands full of trees that are way less than 20 feet apart, and those trees do just fine. But if you know that this ash is going to be around for more time and you have plans to treat it, I probably would make plans to move it. The best time to move it is going to be probably late dormant season or just after it leafs out in the spring. As much of that root ball as you can and move it to a new place. Most maples have crowns that are about 35 to 40 feet wide at maturity. And so that would be an ideal distance from other things to plant it.
Okay. Thank you for your help. I appreciate what you guys do.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mike. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. Here's an organic question for you, Kathleen, from Gwynedd. She says, we planted our first organic garden this past season. We had great success with a number of plants, but we had trouble with tons of cucumber beetles, which went after my sunflowers after they decimated cucumber and squash and tomato grubs. I spent the summer cutting open stems, pulling grubs, and then taping the stalks up. We also lost a number of lettuce that were cut down early. Neem oil didn't do much good on the cucumber beetles, and I don't want to use diatomaceous clay or neem oil if it's going to hurt pollinators. What can I do over the winter season to get rid of overwintering pests? Kathleen, that's a tough one.
Yeah, really sorry to hear that. I was going to say, for once, we didn't have a problem with cucumber beetles this summer. So
lucky you.
We were lucky in our garden. But we definitely get them over in both in our garden and out in our vegetable fields. We have resorted to spending money and time putting out Reme cloth over, I talked about it earlier, over the vegetables to protect them against cucumber beetles. That's the absolute best way to deal with them. It's, you know, a little expensive and it takes some time to put the cloth out there, the shea cloth out there, but it definitely will help keep them away. And you can tack it down with the various things, either those landscape pins or just rocks or soil or re-rod or pieces of wood. Various ways to tack it down. That's the best way. They are pretty resistant to insecticides. They have a hard shell integument. So, yeah, neem might work. But Pyganic is another one we use. It's a combination of pyrethrum, which comes from daisy flowers. So it's pretty safe. But, you know, most people in their garden, they don't want to spray anything. I get that. But if worse comes to worse, I think Pyganic's a little more effective than neem for cucumber beetles.
All right.
But and Aaron mentioned earlier, too, rotation is really key. You know, if you don't plant cucumbers on cucumbers or any cucurbits in the same family, don't plant them where you planted this year and rotate to some other crop and have some flowers around. We always have a lot of flowers in our garden, marigolds for sure, that will help mix things up, because when the pest flies in, it hones in on that one crop, like cucurbits. So if it sees a mixture down there, diversity, it tends to fly away or not as colonized as much.
All right. Several different things to try there. Let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100. Bill is on the line in Solon. Hi, Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I am calling about a Christmas cactus we've had for years. It still drops a little foliage, but it looks good. But we have not been able to get it to bloom. And I know, I remember Richard Geron, talking about how to get it to its point to help it, I don't know, get it to its point.
Get some blossoms.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure Aaron's got your back here. Aaron?
Well, Christmas cactus blooms in response to a specific, to shorter days and long nights. And then there's also a temperature component. They kind of both lay together. And typically, we see both of them happen naturally, even indoors. What we run into challenges is if our plants are in an area, they don't get those long nights because we have the lights on all the time. So like Christmas cactus in a dining room or a kitchen, in a space we have lights on quite a bit, a delay or not have bloom as a result of those lights being on. And so sometimes one of the best ways to kind of play with this, if you have a room in your house that has a good window in it, but isn't used as much, like a spare bedroom or like a room that you're not in very often, something like that, move it to that location and see if you get flowering. Typically, these spaces also have the temperature drop that they're looking for. It's not a big temperature drop, but it's both of those things together that really cue in flowering for Christmas cactus.
All right.
And see what happens.
Yeah, good luck with that, Bill. I hope you get some blossoms this year. We are going to take a short break right now. We'll be back in just a few minutes to answer more of your questions. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. If you're an organic gardener, this is your day to ask questions. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett is here. And Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is also here. 866-780-9100 is the number to call or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett. So if you are in particular an organic gardener, this is a great day to ask your questions, even if they're for next year. 866-780-9100. And Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here. You can also email questions, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to the phones. Vicki is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question about planting milkweeds for monarch butterflies. I've been planting them all over my property for a few years, and I am getting more and more caterpillars. I keep a count according to which bunch of milkweeds. But I want to make sure I'm planting them where the caterpillars have access to the proper habitat to form their pupas, because they need to dangle. So how can I make sure I'm planting them? Does it need to be next to trees? I want to plant some by my mailbox, but the only thing there is like some shrubs, some young Siberian elms and so forth. So how can I make sure the caterpillars have the right habitat? And like if I want to plant them by my mailbox, is there a simple structure I could build from like 2x4s or something to make sure that the caterpillars can form their pupas on a, you know, in their dangly way?
Well, that's a great question, Vicki. Thanks so much for your call. And Aaron, I know at work, when you actually get to physically go into the building, you get to walk past butterflies all the time. So do you have any advice for Vicki?
Most of these caterpillars are going to have no problem making their and hanging their chrysalis on just about anything. And so usually the best advice for gardeners who are looking to be really friendly towards insects is to not be so tidy. And, grass stems and twigs and branches and sticks and the stuff that kind of lays around in the garden all works for these caterpillars to hang their chrysalis from. And so if you're really concerned about providing some structure, a simple pile of or a little bit of twigs and sticks is probably all you need to do. You don't have to build anything out of 2x4s. In fact, that might actually be too bulky for them to really use very well. So being a little less tidy is a long way.
Nice. Anytime you tell people to be less tidy, Aaron, I'm all about it.
It's not everybody's look.
Right.
It's not everybody's look for sure. But it certainly works for butterflies and caterpillars and those kinds of things.
All right, Vicki, thanks so much for your call. And I think it's so cool that you're keeping track of how the population is growing in your yard. Bob is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have a question about maple trees.
Okay.
And it has to do with a black spot about a quarter to a nickel in size that appears on almost every leaf on the maple trees on my property and the neighbors and so forth. I'm wondering what it could be, and is it something to be concerned about?
Well, there are a couple of different diseases that cause black spots on maple. Sometimes anthracnose can look a little bit like this, and that's not anything that you typically have to treat for. Usually healthy plants tolerate that pretty well. There's another disease called tar spot, which does create these very black, kind of irregular spots all over the leaves. It does kind of float around really easily kind of transfer tree to tree relatively easily. It's not easy to treat for this, but making sure you do a good job of fall cleanup, breaking leaves and getting them out of the area so that those spores and other things don't spread, preventing it in future years is probably the best. Again, like anthracnose, this disease isn't necessarily alone going to cause a lot of problems for the tree. It gives it a little bit of stress, but a healthy tree usually tolerates it fairly well. So prevention is the key there. The best thing to do if you know specifically what it is to send a sample to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Nick. They'll be able to look at it and figure out what is. And you can find information about submitting that on Iowa State University's Extension website.
All right, Bob, does that help you out?
That it's one of the things that's curious is that it's almost always a really circular spot, and there's only one spot per leaf.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not tar spot then. So that would be a good one to submit into the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. Because, of course, knowing what it is the best way to figure out, knowing exactly what it is the best way to figure out how to forward with it. And many foliar diseases on shade trees don't require treatment, but doing some things like prevention by good cleanup and some of those things can go a long way.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we've got a couple of questions about evergreens in the wintertime. Mary asks, is there anything you can spray on dwarf Alberta spruce that get a lot of sunshine in the winter to keep them from getting winter burn?
There are some products out there, anti-desiccants or anti-transparents that help reduce this. They're usually sold for the very purpose, so they're marketed in this very way. And you can spray them on, and in the next couple of weeks would probably be the ideal time to do that. And it basically reduces the amount of water loss. You know, when the ground's frozen, the water that's lost to the wind can't be replaced. And so these products can help reduce that. So they do, and most garden centers would carry it. A product called Wilt Proof is one that comes to mind right off the top of my head, but there are several different types out there. They're sold as anti-desiccants for this very purpose.
All right. And the other question was, when should I spray my anti-desiccants? So I think you just answered that one as well. Yep. Let's go back to the phones. Melissa's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have peonies that I love. Every year they get spots on them, and then they still flower, but then they just get spots and kind of wilt throughout the summer. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can put on them, or if they aren't really as vibrant and healthy and robust as they should be. And then the other question I have is, I have a cold frame with cabbage, and something like a worm or something eating holes in my cabbage, and I'm wondering if there's something organic I can put on to treat that.
Well, let's start with the peonies and Aaron, and then Kathleen can cover that cabbage question. So hold on, Melissa. Aaron?
With the peonies, a peony leaf spot or leaf blotch is pretty common. Good fall cleanup will go a long way. So as soon as the foliage dies back, going out and removing it from the garden so that the inoculum is not there to reinfect in the following year or at least you'll have less to reinfect the following year. Another thing that will help is if you can possibly increase light and kind of air circulation area. So if there's a lot of branches or shrubs really close by, kind of trimming them back to get light in and also helping in more air circulation. If the plants are too shady, they're more prone to these issues too, and they also won't bloom as well. And so if you need to move them, about 3 weeks ago was actually the time to move them. Good news is peonies are really hardy plants, so you don't have to worry too much about this probably taking the plants out, but increasing light, increasing air circulation, good fall cleanup are all steps to help with this.
All right.
Okay,
now,
thank you. So as soon as they are done flowering, I cut them back or I wait till the end?
No, next season. So after they die back from a frost, if they haven't died back already, which they may have.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I understand.
Cut it back. Yep.
All right. Now let's talk about cabbage. So, Melissa, remind us again what your concern is.
I have a cold frame with cabbage growing, and there are holes in the leaves. And I put some beer out there to catch the slugs that I thought were eating them, but there was nothing in the beer this morning. So I looked it up, and it seems like there's some other worm or something that could be eating them, and I just don't know what to put on them that's organic.
All right, Kathleen?
Sure. That is really surprising that they're making their way into the cold frame, because what I'm speculating is it's a cabbage butterfly. That's what laid eggs and created worms in my garden on my cabbage, or actually it was on my broccoli this year. But, you know, that was out in the open. And so it's interesting that you're seeing that under a cold frame.
I just put the cold frame up. The cabbage has been growing. Oh. It was growing for 6 weeks before I put the cold frame up. So maybe something got in there.
Definitely.
What do you do with these? Is like a cabbage white worm? Is that what it is?
Cabbage worm, yeah. As we say here at Iowa State, identify the critter first, if you can. I mean, I'm glad you're out there looking, and look all the time, because you want to make sure this is what you're treating for. The good news is the product I mentioned earlier, Dipel, which is a Bacillus thuringiensis natural bacteria. It's good for all caterpillars. So you can put that on. I'm really surprised that they're still flying. I admit, I have seen this white cabbage butterfly. I have seen them really late this year because of our warm weather. But I haven't noticed them in the last couple of weeks. So, but then again, they might have laid their eggs and then out they're coming. But really, the first line of control is crushing them. I mean, I'm out there crushing caterpillars all the time in my garden. So,
I haven't seen one. So would I see them during the day, or do they go into the soil during the day?
No, if it's a cabbage worm, they'll be out in the daytime. The only other thing is cut worms, but they mow down the whole plant. They come out at night.
Maybe your
speculation about slugs could be true too. Keeping that beer out there is the only way to trap them, so that's good that you're doing that.
Well, it's a happy death.
Exactly.
Thank you.
All right, Melissa. Sure. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. We've got a couple people with a similar question, so I'm going to, just in the interest of time, ask this one. On behalf of Jan, she says she's got iris bulbs that she didn't get around to dividing earlier in the summer. They probably need to be divided. Can she still do that?
I would wait till next summer. Late summer, early fall is the best time to divide iris, and we're many weeks beyond that, so I would wait.
All right. Yes, and Carol has a similar question. She said she wanted to know about iris, but she also says, if I can find some, can I still plant peonies?
If you find it, you can give it a try. Hopefully it's a free little division from a friend or a really good deal. So the risk is worth it, but it's certainly easier to overwinter things in the ground than in a container. So if you have it, put it in the ground and hope for the best.
Right. But we can't forget that it is November, right? I mean, it's beautiful outside, but it is November, and December follows November. It's going to get cold.
Yes, it is.
All right. And any minute. All right. Let's go next to Katie in Waterloo. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm thinking about rhubarb. So I'm pretty sure I over-harvested my rhubarb this earlier this year. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do kind of fall prep to help it, help them do better or to recover for next year.
All right. How to take care of rhubarb if you've over-harvested, Aaron?
Well, I think one of the best things to do is to give it a little bit of a break next spring to help kind of let it recover some. You can also fertilize. I would not fertilize now, but you can fertilize, usually putting down fertilizer after the leaves start to emerge in the spring. Rhubarb responds very strongly to fertilizer. It really loves it. And so that would be another thing that you could plan to. You can remove dead foliage when frost kills it back, but you can also leave it in place over the winter and remove it first thing in the spring. That little blanket of foliage can help it overwinter better. Rhubarb's a pretty hardy plant, so that's not usually an issue, but every little bit can help.
All right. Just a time for a couple more questions here. Tom is on the line in Cumming. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep. What's your question?
In an effort to have a more organic garden, what do you recommend for like a fertilizer in lieu of having a compost pile?
All right, Kathleen.
Sure. Yeah. It's amazing to me, since I've started here at Iowa State, how many more garden centers are now carrying organic fertilizers. So just go into your favorite farm and garden and see what they have there. Most of them are manure-based, but they're sanitized. So, you don't have to worry about the smell anymore. And we just buy a good manure-based compost from our local farm and garden. It works really well in the garden. Actually, we have a video about it. If you go to Iowa State, probably if you just do a general Google, gardening while isolated, fertilizing, you can see us doing a demo in the garden using that fertilizer. But anything that's naturally based, and in general, they're manure-based. Some are 100% vegetarian or vegan, they call them, and they are all plant-based, like alfalfa meal. For example, is the basis of them if you want to go that route. But in general, you're going to be looking for something that's got a manure base to it.
Very good. What do you think about potash for a fertilizer?
Right. Again, it's a good fertilizer, but definitely take a soil sample, see if you need it. Most Iowa soils, I'm from Florida, so I just die at the fertility of soils here. You don't really need to add anything. But check it out, and you can take it into your local extension office and get your soil tested. It will cost nowadays, but actually, I take that back. I think the end of that, you have to send. Well, you can go to the extension office, and they can tell you where to send it to. But we use Midwest Labs in Omaha, for example, to make sure that you really need to add any potassium to your soil. Most Iowa soils are fine with have enough potassium in them to get you a good garden, so check first before spending any money on it.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for your call. And Kathleen Dellett, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Charity, and Google 2020 Iowa Organic Conference to sign up.
Absolutely. And people do need to register, and it's on Monday, November 23rd, but it's virtual, so you can attend it from anywhere in the state of Iowa, Iowa State University, or anywhere. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett. Aaron Stile, thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.